some fell right down that rabbit hole. So reality is questionable. Try, but you just can't let it go. These two right here put on a show. It's paranormal overload with Southern hospitality. Haunted murder, mayhem, tip while discussing immortality. Locations with a dark past, history that comes to life. Hillbillies with a knack for everything that goes bump at night. Overthinking if you by yourself, these two will have you turning on the lights. Mixing in a little comedy to make sure it all fits in just right, hey.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now here's your hosts, Jerry and Tracy Paul, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 282 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
You know, this has been a very fast week, first of all.
This has been a very fast week. You are exactly right.
So Tracy, obviously we want to start off by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thank you for everything that you do, and a big massive shout out to everybody that's helped in the tornado-ravaged states that over this past weekend. Obviously, there were, I think, five states involved: Missouri, Illinois, Kentucky, Arkansas, Tennessee, and massive casualties in almost every one of these locations. It's one of the biggest natural disasters that I've seen in our area,
right,
in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's very devastating, heartbreaking, and you know, just sometimes you just say this cannot be happening. But we do appreciate all the people that are going there to help out, and with all their efforts, we want to say a huge thank you to you guys for donating some money for that relief fund. You guys are, I just want to cry because you guys have been so amazing, and we cannot thank you guys enough.
And for those of you who aren't sure what she's talking about, because not everybody's in the group and what have you, one of the hardest hit areas was down in Mayfield, Kentucky. It's in the western part of the state, about 4 hours from us. And we decided once this happened, we quickly put together a plan to go down there on Wednesday and take a bunch of supplies. And initially, it was just going to be us gathering some stuff up on our own and going down. And we decided to open it up to you guys. And from about, I guess, 4 or 5 o'clock yesterday until this time today, you guys have contributed over $1,400.
Actually, it's more than that.
That's what I said, over.
Oh, yeah. No, it's more closer to 2,000 now. We had a friend.
Oh, yeah. I forgot you're considering that.
We also had a friend that her family has also donated money and stuff. So all together, it's just mind-blowing that you guys came so quick and to help, and we cannot thank you guys enough. It means the world to us, and we are more than happy to take this stuff down there. I wish there was more that we could do, because I mean, but what can you do? You know, all right. You can try to do is support, be there, pray, you know, for this, and I don't know.
Yeah, Tracy's friend wanted to get on board, and she got some of her family members helped out. And I know when we talked to her earlier, she went to Costco and had purchased $500 worth of stuff for us to pick up and take with us.
Yeah, so well, thank you so much, sweetheart, for doing that. And you guys are amazing to us every single day, and you never disappoint. And we love you all with all our hearts. And this is what it's about at Christmas time, which is a terrible thing to happen at Christmas time. But when the pouring of love comes out to help people, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. And you guys, like you said, you know, a couple of years ago, we welcomed a family that was on down under luck into our house for Christmas. And then you guys helped out with some of that.
Yeah, you sure did.
Last year, we had another family in need in our group. And I think we ended up getting $1,700 collected for them. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, in one day, you guys contributed, you know, almost $2,000.
Yeah, it's amazing.
To help out here. And we are so grateful that we have a platform to be able to reach out and help. But even more thankful that you guys are part of our extended family.
Yes. We couldn't have done it without you guys. Like Jerry said, we are very grateful for you guys. And we will never forget what you all have done for us.
And with that being said, you know, not everybody's in the group, not everybody saw the post, but if you guys would want to contribute, what we're doing is we're going down. There's a couple of churches down in the area that are very hard hit that are distributing this stuff out to people in need. And what they needed were like basics, baby food, baby formula, wipes, diapers, toiletry items, you know, soap and shaving cream, razors, stuff like that. And what we're doing is we went out today and spent the first $450 on a bunch of baby food and formula mm-hmm. and stuff like that to get going. And then, like I said, we're going to go out over the next couple of days and pick up some other stuff. But that's the necessities they're needing. And if you guys would want to contribute, if you go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com, there is a donate button. It's just a donate to the show. It doesn't say anything about the tornado relief. But anything we receive off of that over the next all the way up to Wednesday, we're just going to use towards this fund.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So if you want to contribute, there's a way you can. If not, that's completely fine,
too. Of course, of course.
We're completely thrilled with what we got. But
just
if you
prayers,
want to,
yeah. even prayers will help.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you want to help, if you want to send a couple of dollars or something, we'll purchase everything and then take it down there to them. So
yeah, you guys are awesome.
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk, obviously, before we get into that, we want to make sure, because, I mean, now's a more perfect time than any to speak about this, is, you know, if you're struggling right now mentally, and trust me, there's a lot of people in these five states that have been affected by this that I'm sure are going through a rough time. And, you know, there's a candle factory or down in this part where we're going in Mayfield. I mean, there was 110 people in there. And they're expecting almost half of those people to not be found alive. Those friends and family members of those people are going to struggle this time of year with the death of loved ones and some people, and there are families at work. So there could be people lose multiple members of their family from this catastrophic event. Same thing in the Amazon warehouse up in Illinois. I mean, people are going to struggle, and we just want people to know if you're struggling this time of year, whether it be for that or for anything else, please know that we're here for you if you need to talk.
Of course.
I've spent the last 3 days talking to several people that it's like I said, this time of year, even without these things happening, this time of year is tough on a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
We're here for you. The group is there for you if you want to join the group or
Tracing. Yeah, you can call the hotline at 1-800-273-8255. You can also text at 741-741. And actually, somebody told me the other day that they sent a text and they said they got a response like immediately.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's good to know. So, but we love you guys and, you know, we can all get through this and, you know, just keep on praying.
They said normally we like to jump into the show a little bit quicker, but I felt like this stuff needed to be addressed at the very beginning. So. Yeah,
very, very. We need to talk about it. So
yeah, and it's, you know, we'll try to get back in a better mood, but it's very somber around here because the stories just seem to keep getting worse as the updates come out, and it's hard. Our focus, obviously, in the past day has been more on trying to get stuff together than it has been the show, you know, not to say that the show's not important, obviously, but, you know, some of this stuff takes a little more precedence. But the research and everything was already done for this week, so shouldn't be an issue.
All right. Sounds good, baby.
Tracy, we got a special guest on tonight, Johan Weishaupt from Haunted Kentucky.
It's awesome.
A paranormal investigator and a group that's pretty fun on Facebook. So
good.
And they have a really cool logo, so I like their logo.
Oh, awesome.
But Johan will be on here in a little bit. I thought what we would do today is something a little different. Because, let me just jump into it. Usually we cover haunted locations and some true crime and stuff like that. Now, these are all obviously stories, but last week's story that we did from Minnesota was a little bit different, because most of the shows we do are like just a breakdown of the facts in chronological order, right?
Right.
Last week's was really just a story start to finish. And I like that. Those stories are more like campfire stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I started thinking maybe we should do some more stories like that. And I'm not saying we're doing it every week.
Yeah.
But
we could switch it up.
Right. So I thought that maybe we could do something like that this week. So I started thinking of storytelling like that reminds me of more folklore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started thinking, well, what's a state that we haven't done a lot of stories from? And I came up with Arkansas. I mean, obviously, we've done the Crescent Hotel and the creature of, Bogey Creek Monster. And we've done those two. That's the two main ones we've done from Arkansas. So I thought, there's got to be more from that state, obviously, that we've just overlooked over the years. So today, we're going to do some stories from the great state of Arkansas. So are you excited about that?
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time driving through Arkansas on this last trip to Texas.
We sure did.
About 125 years ago, there was a doctor by the name of Ferdinand Smith. He was from Missouri, and he decided that he wanted to move his family to Locksburg, Arkansas. Now, this was a small settlement in the southwestern part of the state. At the town had no physician, and Dr. Smith, being a dedicated healer, he wanted to go to where he was most needed.
Sounds like a plan.
His wife Isabella and the children were very excited about this move. In fact, they looked at it as an adventure.
Well, good for them.
I mean, you're talking about a time back when
there's nothing else to do.
There's nothing else to do. So, I mean, traveling from one place to another, I mean, that's got to be pretty exciting.
Of course.
Most of the family talked very fondly about the move for years after. Most of which, except for Genevieve, who was 6 years old at the time. And that's because Jenny, as she was mainly called, was the only one of the family to witness a murder.
Oh, poor baby.
Now, you're going to like how this turns out.
Oh, good.
Maybe not.
Oh, shoot. You got me coming and going here.
So the let me go all the way back to the beginning. So the Smith family, they leave Missouri. This was early summertime. Miss Smith drove the family wagon down with the children. She had a few necessities like food, clothes, and camping equipment. The furniture and stuff would all be brought by a wagon train at a later time, but they didn't need that stuff right now. Dr. Smith acted as the scout, so he rode his horse ahead of the wagon just to make sure there wasn't any surprises along the way. He was not easily frightened, but he did wear a pair of guns, one on each side, to ease his wife's concerns. After all, they were going to be traveling through some unsettled territory, and she was concerned about being held up by some ruffians. I like that she used the term ruffian.
Mm-hmm.
Isabella was a pretty good shot herself, and she actually had a couple of rifles on board the wagon with her as well. So the family enjoyed the trip over the hills and the plains because they had never been this way before. They cooked their food out on an open campfire under the stars.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they passed other wagons on the opposite direction, they would kind of wave, and sometimes they would even share a meal together. So this was a fun trip. The kids initially loved meeting all the new friends and traveling, but eventually it was no longer fun. In fact, it was long and tedious.
I can hear him. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Get that horse go any faster?
Almost. Just 34 more days. So after they crossed the Arkansas border, progress actually slowed down as the horses kind of plodded through the red clay soil that was now sticky because of recent rains. So you can imagine this stuff just clumping onto the horse's feet.
No, not a good thing.
But the family made it to their new home after 2 months on the road. Even with the few delays that they had because of the, you know, terrain and what have you, they still arrived a little bit early. So it was possible that their house might not be quite ready yet, since they're showing up early.
Oh, dang.
This would mean that they would have to find some kind of temporary shelter. So to make matters worse, Jenny now had been sick for several days, and she seemed to be seriously ill. They definitely could not sleep outside another night. So Dr. Smith, he tied his horse up in front of the general store. He went inside and introduced himself to the store owner, R.A. Gilman. Now, Gilman explained that he was glad that the good doctor was actually there early, but as feared, the house wasn't ready.
Aww.
It would still be a few days, as a matter of fact, before it would be ready. So Dr. Smith completely understood, and he asked if there was a place that they might be able to rent for a couple of days. Gilman offered a space in his house, but the doctor politely declined. This might seem kind of rude or picky, but really it was neither one. He just didn't want to impose on the gentleman, and he also didn't want to bring a sick kid into his house.
Right. Well, that was nice.
So Gilman thought for a second, and he said, "You know what? There's a log house at the edge of the village." The owner had apparently recently died, and the ladies in town had been keeping it tidy. In fact, they even joked that it could be their town hotel.
Oh!
The log home was in a grove of sycamore trees. It looked to be in fantastic shape, and it was just absolutely beautiful. The doctor was excited to spend his time there for at least a couple of days. So he tied up his horse, he removed the saddle, the bridle, and the blanket, and he took it inside the house. He did this while the family was waiting in the wagon. Again, he wants to check out the place first.
That's what a good daddy does.
In one corner of the front room, the doctor noticed that there was a large blood stain on the floor.
Oh, boy.
So he dropped the saddle on the spot to cover it up, and he went out to get the family. They only unloaded the necessary items for the night. No sense in unpacking everything. They had to load it right back up in 2 days.
Yeah, right.
Isabella made up the beds in the back bedroom. And then the doctor actually made up the bed for Jenny in the front room. His plan was to sit up with her all night long and give her the medicine that she required and to make sure everything was all right with her. Around midnight, the girl became delirious. She screamed that she saw four men playing cards across the room from her. They were dark, ugly men. Suddenly, three of the men stood up, threw down their cards, and pulled knives out of their belts. She screamed, "Daddy, Daddy, they're killing that man in the chair." Dr. Smith held his daughter's hand in his and soothingly asked her what the men looked like. She described the men fully. Red shirts, open at the neck, brown shapeless pants tucked into dirt-caked boots, and hats pulled low onto their forehead. That's pretty script.
Yeah, for a six-year-old even, you know?
She sobbed as she told her father that the man screamed as he fell to the floor and lay motionless. He had been stabbed in the chest and then twice more in the back after he fell. The three men stomped out the door. Little Jenny covered her ears as tears welled up in her eye. "Daddy, the blood's all over the floor," Jenny cried, as she gripped her father's fingers with both hands. Dr. Smith saw absolutely nothing.
Oh, it's where the saddle was, I bet.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Isabella and the other children ran into the room because they were awoken by Jenny's screams. And the doctor told them that everything was okay. Jenny just had a terrible nightmare. They needed to go back to bed and get some sleep. Jenny fell into a deep sleep herself. The doctor lay beside her on a pallet, and he pondered the significance of what Jenny had seen. None of the children had ever had nightmares before. And none of them had ever had any type of hallucination, not even when they had a high fever. He was uneasy, so he got no sleep whatsoever. The next morning, the doctor visited the general store and he talked to Mr. Gilman. Now, Gilman inquired about Jenny and was glad to hear that she was doing much better. Then the doctor asked Gilman the key question. "What can you tell me about the house that we're staying in? Has anyone stayed there recently?" So Gilman hesitated as he stocked the groceries on the shelves. He said, "Not for several weeks. That was when four strangers showed up during a hellacious rainstorm and they asked about shelter. As I did with you, I told them about that place. They stayed there for one night. They were a little rough looking, but pleasant enough."
Mm-hmm.
His description of the men matched the description that Jenny had given, and a cold chill swept over the doctor. So then came the next question. "Tell me, Gilman, Was there ever any trouble in the house? Gilman, with his back to the doctor, said, "Trouble?" To which the doctor replied, "A murder, perhaps?" Gilman slowly turned around and was face to face with the doctor. Yes, as a matter of fact, there was a brawl that night that those men stayed there. One of them was stabbed to death.
Oh, good grief.
Two women found the body the very next morning when they came to tidy up. They never found out his name. They just had a little service for him and buried him in the cemetery. Then Gilman asked how he knew about what had taken place. The doctor explained that there was just a huge blood stain on the floor in the front room. So Gilman nodded and he said, "Yeah, the lady scrubbed and scrubbed, but they never could get rid of it. One of the ladies says that the stain seems to grow every time she sees it." Gilman said that it sure was strange that those killers just got clean away. So about this time, the bell over the door rings because somebody had walked in. And Gilman leaned over to the doctor and whispered, "We don't like to talk about it." After Dr. Smith moved his family into their new home, he learned that the cabin was generally thought to be haunted by the people in the village. Several caretakers had also experienced the reenactment of the bloody brawl that happened that night, and then all of them refused to go near the cabin again. Some swore that they heard the shrieks of a dying man. Eventually, the cabin became abandoned and was taken over by the elements. And Jenny eventually grew up and married a gentleman by the name of James King of Oklahoma. She never forgot about her terrifying experience. And whenever someone brought up ghosts, she remained silent, but mindful that there are events that cannot be explained.
It's so bizarre how a little kid can see all that, and it's exactly how it was.
It's exactly how it was.
Well,
what do you think?
I think it was a good story.
All right, so
I wonder why she was sick.
Well, I mean, it's the 1800s. I mean, I'm sure it could have been anything.
Yeah.
Could have been something they ate along the way. I'm sure they didn't have the best refrigeration and stuff. And...
This is true.
All right, so since that story is not the longest story, I decided to do some folklore creatures / cryptids from Arkansas. So let's talk about a couple of beasts that exist in the Arkansas according to legend. Of course, we all know about the Falk Monster. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Legend of Boggy Creek. And I always get that wrong. It's Boggy Creek, I guess. But I always say Boggy, because that's the way I always grew up hearing it.
Yeah.
That's the way I always grew up hearing it.
Yo, Hick.
Anyways, did you know that Arkansas has its own creature similar to the Loch Ness Monster?
I did not know that.
It's known as the White River Monster. Its nickname is Whitey. And tales go all the way back to 1912. At least that's the first documented report. Because some people believe that Whitey was responsible for capsizing boats during the Civil War in the 1860s. But back to 1912, the first official report. Timber workers reported seeing something strange floating at the bottom of the White River. Now, according to reports, it looked like a humongous turtle. They estimated that it weighed close to 300 pounds, which, in all honesty, it doesn't seem all that big when you're comparing it to Nessie, because I got a feeling Nessie would be more than 300 pounds.
Did you say it was a turtle?
It said it looked like a humongous turtle. That's what they compared it to. So they get this hunting party together, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to capture this creature, but they were not successful. And we know this because there's been other sightings over the years. There were sporadic sightings over the next 35 years, but the next big one was in 1937.
Well, maybe that turtle had babies.
Maybe.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but every time you'll see as we go that this thing gets bigger and bigger every story.
Oh, okay.
In July of 1937, a plantation owner by the name of Bramlett Bateman You ever heard of a name like Bramlett?
No.
He had a sighting.
Not for a first name.
Yeah, I've not heard it for a first name. But he had a sighting. He said he saw a gray-skinned monster in the White River near Newport that was as wide as a car and the length of three cars.
Well, that's pretty big.
That's a lot bigger.
Oh, heck yeah, it is.
His account made national news, and it was actually picked up by Time Magazine's August edition. Now we're going to jump ahead to 1971. Reports started happening again. Apparently, this thing likes to make its appearance decades apart. Because it went from 1912 to 1937 to 1970.
Oh, that is bizarre.
What do you hear the description here? Some say it has a horn protruding from its forehead, weighs close to 1,000 pounds. Others claim that it's 20 feet long with spikes coming off of its back. There are even reports that the creature leaves the river and leaves tracks on the land. What do these tracks look like, you wonder?
I'm sure they're deep and hard.
Three-toed and 14-inch apart. Or 14-inch tracks.
Wait, it's got three toes?
That's what it says. Three toes and 14 inches.
Wow.
The fascination with the story grew so much that Senator Robert Harvey signed a bill into legislation to protect it. The bill made it illegal to harm Whitey, since we're on a first-name basis, if he was in a certain section of White River. And that section was between Newport and Possum Grape. I don't know how you come up with a name like Possum Grape. But it was that area, that stretch of the river was called the White River Monster Refuge.
So he didn't want nobody killing it if they saw it.
Right. It was against the law.
But what if he started to attack?
Well, I mean, it's you're getting too deep into the woods here.
Aw.
So if there is a White River monster, what exactly is it? The biggest theory is that it's a giant alligator snapping turtle.
There's such a thing?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of snapping turtles, but...
They can live up to 150 years.
Whoa.
They have a pointed head and a spiny back and can be up to 400 pounds. They can also appear to be gray in color.
Well, there you go. Sounds like it.
The first example said that it looked like a humongous turtle, so I would say that's probably what it is.
So then the big old turtle and the alligator got it on?
I don't know if that's exactly what happened.
Oh.
I don't know that it's not physically possible.
Can you imagine?
But I don't know how many alligators are in Arkansas.
Well, that's true. Man, can you imagine having to have that body 150 years? It's like, oh, man. But he's always home.
Stop. Can you imagine when bill collectors come there?
Yeah.
Trying to tap on its shell. Don't act like you're not home. We know better. So, Whitey isn't the only creature roaming around, according to Arkansas folklore, though. The Ozarks are said to be home of the Groro.
Well, what the heck is a Groro?
I think that's what Scooby says.
Roro? Roro?
It's described as a wingless dragon. I think that's a dinosaur. It's like saying a wingless fly.
I know.
That's a spider. Anyways, it's got two tusks in its head, webbed feet, and a spiky back. Oh, and a spear at the very end of its tail. And it's about 20 feet long. That's what it's described at.
Heck on. Sounds like a monster.
It feeds off of livestock and small animals. That makes sense. Now, there was a story written about it in the Arkansas Gazette on January 31st, 1897. It got its nickname, by the way, by apparently the sound that it makes.
Oh.
I guess Groro, I don't know what sound that would make. So the story goes that there was a Little Rock businessman. His name was William Miller, and he tried to capture it. He found a hunting group who tracked the creature to a cave. that supposedly was scattered with remains of humans and animals.
Oh, no. Ugh.
The Goro emerged from the lake that was right there by the cave. It put up a big fight, but supposedly was captured by Miller and his crew. So, obviously, when you capture something like that, what would you do?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, what do you do with it after you capture it? It's sure big enough, too big to mount on a wall, don't you think?
You would think. Miller said that he sent it to Washington, D.C. to be put on display in the Smithsonian Institution. But the body never arrived, which leads most to believe that it was a hoax.
Aww.
Speaking of hoax, Vance Rudolph, he actually believes that the Goro did exist. And he thinks it's more of a species than a single creature, so they're like a family of them.
Yeah.
He had heard several stories over the years. One of them came from a cave explorer in Devil's Hole. And another came from a man, get this. He claims that he lured it into captivity by feeding it so many apples that it got stuck in a burrow. In like a hole in the ground. And get this. This person went on to charge 25 cents to any person who wanted to see the Goro. Here's the problem, though. Whenever he had a crowd of paying customers, he would put on this show of the Goro had gotten loose, and he barely escaped with his life. So there is actually no documentation that he ever really had one. He was just basically charging people, and then when they showed up, he was like, oh, damn, it got away.
Well, I'd be demanding my dang quarterback.
I guess he felt like you paid for the show. Since he put on a good show. And
Oh my gosh.
But there is still talk in around the Ozarks area that the Goro is still roaming around. So there you go.
I would like to see that.
I would like to see.
From afar.
I would like to see. I'm going to have to look up some pictures to see what it looks like.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be an interesting look going on there.
So anyways, that's what we got right now. And we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor, our buddies at Feels.
Feels.
And then we'll be back. We got a couple quick housekeeping notes, and then we'll listen to this interview from Johan from Haunted Kentucky.
Oh, sounds great, baby.
Obviously, we're not going to dwell on a lot of these things. It's kind of a somber show, like we said earlier. There's more important things going on. But we do have all of our live shows set up, including the cruise. If you want to see about any of them, we've got Indianapolis, Louisville, Williamson, West Virginia, Bobby Mackey's, and then obviously the cruise. And all those are available. They're up for sale right now. It's possible Chicago might be in the works, but that's, I'm not saying anything for sure right now, but we're trying.
It's still in the works.
It's still in the works. But anyway, everything that is for sale, you can go to hillbillyhorrorstories.com. It's also where you can donate if you want to donate, and go check that out. So Tracy, what do you got going on over there?
On our iTunes this week, we have Heather, the Crazy Mail Lady.
Nice.
I love that. And thank you for your awesome review. We appreciate you. And our lovely Mojo Lobster, which never fails. He has a review for us every week, and we love it. Thank you guys so much for taking your time out to do that. And then our Patreons this week is Courtney and Mandy Hill. Thank you guys for your patronage and everything you do for us. We can't thank you guys enough.
Absolutely. All right, so let's listen real quick to Johan Weishup from Haunted Kentucky. Hey, guys. I'm very happy to have our guest on from Haunted Kentucky. I've got Johan Weishup. And we've been talking a little bit off and on, Johan, for probably 3 or 4 weeks, getting this thing set up. You are the founder of Haunted Kentucky, which is a Facebook group. It's also a paranormal group. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it. Watched some of your shows and didn't be able to get y'all, meet y'all at Crypticon, but I actually look forward to seeing y'all or meeting y'all pretty soon.
Yeah, I need to try to find out where some of these conventions are that are close to us, because I want to try to hit more of those this year. It's not something we've typically done. Everything we've done's actually been in the city of Lexington. So Scarefest once and CryptidCon twice, and we'll be back there this coming year. But yeah, we need to do some more of that kind of stuff. So tell me a little bit about Haunted Kentucky. Like, for example, as far as you go, how long have you been investigating?
I went full time with it at the beginning of this year. I first started doing it last September. We was actually at the Midsummer Nights Cruise in Somerset, Kentucky. And my buddy, Randy, which he's part of Haunted Kentucky as well, he took me out to a little graveyard called Souls Chapel. And, I've been to graveyards, but this place has a history back from the 1800s. So I really didn't know where to go about it. So I just took, random pictures. I done a little video. And I was like, man, this is awesome. I really want to learn about this stuff. And I made the group, I made a post in Haunted History of Kentucky. I didn't know where to start at. I let everybody vote. I said, what should we call ourselves? And they said, the most votes, I think we had like 60-something votes, was Haunted Kentucky. And I've had it ever since. And I made my little logo and trying to grow the group a little bit. I had some members and they've left and done their own thing. I recently got a new member of the group and she does all my research. But other than that, it's a learning process, definitely.
How many people do you have right now as part of Haunted Kentucky?
My paranormal, just like I go out and do things. It's me, Randy, and then Shelly Parker Fillion. She's out of North Carolina. She just joined about 2 weeks ago and she does all my research, my social media stuff. Because it was hard for me to film, edit, do 5 different, like, TikTok, Facebook, all that stuff.
Right.
It's just so overwhelming. I was 2 months behind on all my filming, my uploading to YouTube and all that stuff. So it's just been a process, of different things.
So let's talk about cemeteries. You brought up, obviously, the one there in Somerset. And we're going to talk a lot more about Somerset before we let you go. But I just did release an episode this morning on our, what we call our Hillbilly Dead Time story. And it was actually talking about cemeteries. And the whole thing was, some people just don't believe that cemeteries are haunted. And, my whole thought process on it is, how can a cemetery be haunted when that's not really where people die? It makes sense that somebody would die somewhere and their spirit would decide to haunt that location, or a spirit would come back to a place they love. But why would a spirit hang around a cemetery just because they're buried there? That's, some people believe that they just want to be where their body is. And some people believe that it doesn't make sense for them to be there at all. What is your thought process on a haunted cemetery in general?
When I first started doing this, that's the only place we didn't know any locations, so I was learning where to go. I think if something happened at a cemetery I think it could have a connection to it, like a residual thing. But I don't think that, for instance, I'll bring up Souls Chapel. Stuff happened at Souls Chapel to make it haunted. The Reverend there was Reverend James. I had to remember his last name. But he actually took the people, put them in the church, and kept them, held them hostage back in the 1800s. And I think, for instance, when something happens at a location like a cemetery, it could make it haunted. But just people being there, people buried, I don't think it would make it haunted per se.
Now, see, that makes a lot more sense there because something happened on site. So that definitely does make sense. So what about, we talked a little bit off air about the Gates of Hell Cemetery in Elizabethtown. And our listeners are very familiar with Gates of Hell because we've done a complete story on it. We've also played in that episode, Bishop James Long was at our Louisville event a couple of years ago. And somebody in the audience brought up Gates of Hell Cemetery. And man, I've never seen him so sincere and agitated as he told people to not go to Gates of Hell, that some of the stuff he'd experienced there. And he was adamant that this was one place that you just don't go. And I've never seen him that worked up. You, on the other hand, have said you've been to Gates of Hell, and you may not think that it's necessarily as haunted as most people think. Give me a little bit of your reasoning behind that.
Okay. As soon as you walk in, you know, you got the Casey Cemetery, everybody puts gifts there for people that's buried there. Now, when you go to the back of the cemetery, there's a little tree. I don't know if you could see it now, but it was like a smiley face painted right there. Now, to the left of that, it's supposed to be a circle of graves there that's supposed to be witches done stuff there. That's what I was told. I don't know if that's true. I've not really done a lot of, you know, research on the place, but being in the graveyard, we set up some a vortex static dome. I got some hits off the REM pod, but not a lot. You know, people think, oh, it's really, really haunted. Well, I understand, because everybody gets different places or different stuff from different places. But now if you go back after, there's a little fence there. Now, back in the woods, I couldn't find it myself. Somebody told me that there's supposed to be like a ritual site back there that people has done, I guess, rituals, satanic stuff. Now, that part of it, I would understand him being upset, you know, people doing satanic rituals, stay out of there. I couldn't find that because it was dark. Maybe that's the reason, but other than a lot of things happening in the cemetery, I don't think that, I'm not saying it's not haunted, just, you know, per se, but I don't know.
His thing was that he saw a very big shadow figure that was literally almost as tall as the trees. And he said it was the first time he'd ever seen something that actually made him skittish. And that was his main reason, not so much for the history, but from what he saw while he was there.
You know, he could have went after somebody has performed a ritual and they've conjured up something. I don't know. You know, I'm learning about demons and all this stuff. A lot of people say about demons, like what I've learned, you know, it could be wrong, but a demon's there to do its job and then it leaves. I don't think demons stick around. You know, that's like a different discussion, but I'm trying to give an example of the location.
Tell me a little bit about some encounters that you've had while you've been investigating that maybe freaked you out a little bit.
One of the first ones was every time we got a new piece of equipment, we go back to Souls Chapel. It's kind of like our testing ground. You know, we go there to, you know, test everything out. Well, I wasn't recording at the time. We was at the little, like the center of it, there's a tree and it's a really old tree. And there was like an old building that was been torn down next to it. Well, I was setting up the REM pod. When I turned around, I was like, there is no way I just seen that. It was like a shadow figure, black shadow figure, maybe about 6 foot, just walk, not running, just walking along the grave, you know, the fence of it. I don't think it was nothing negative. I think it was somebody protecting, you know, looking over the graveyard. That kind of freaked me out and I was ready to go. Now, I've been to Raw's Opera House in Cynthiana, Kentucky. In the basement there, we've heard like somebody taking a piece of metal and throwing it. There was nobody down there, heard it twice. I don't know if it was trying to get us out of the basement, you know, trying to scare us out of there. I don't know what it was. I'd say the most recent thing, I was at the Paramount Arts Theater in Ashland, Kentucky. I was doing EVP and it told us to leave. Like, I didn't know what was going on. So I asked people that have been there before, and a person had died at almost the same spot on the where we was at. So I guess it didn't like us being there, and it kind of upsetting, you know, you don't know what's going on. Anytime I do an EVP or a spirit tells me to leave, I respect it. I did my closing statement and I get out of there. So it kind of spooked me a little bit.
All right. So I'm going to pick your brain a little bit for people who aren't as familiar with paranormal investigating. You just mentioned you do your closing statement. Right. Tell everybody what exactly that means when you say your closing statement.
Okay. I kind of keep it the same thing as my opening. But when I do my closing statement, I pretty much tell it, you know, you can't come with me. You have to stay where you're at. I do like just a small prayer. Sometimes I always do a prayer, but I kind of keep it short. So if you're doing any kind of, if you want to get into ghost hunting or anything, obviously you can't have an attachment to you. So if you're out anywhere, doesn't matter where you're at, always ask, you know, if you can be there, if you have permission from the spirit, you know, tell them what you're doing when you leave. Trying to tell them, you know, you can't follow me home. You have to stay here just to protect yourself.
It's kind of like last call at a bar. You know, you don't have to go home, but it's you can't stay here.
Get your drink.
So let's talk a little bit about equipment. You've mentioned a REM pod a couple of times. Now, I know what a REM pod is, but for those listening that don't understand that particular tool, how would you break that down to them?
Okay. A REM pod is one of my favorite things to use. I don't have one on me. I would show it to you. It's a circle about that big, and it's got an antenna on it. And what it does, it picks up the EMF from a spirit. So a spirit puts off, you know, I would say it has to have electricity from batteries, from a car battery, cell phone, or anything to show itself. So if anything is near that, it will set it off. It'll start beeping, and it has like little lights on it, you know. Very few times I've had that REM pod actually, you know, go purple or go like a darker color. It's one of the best piece of equipment you can have, I believe.
I mean, most people are used to seeing the little EMF readers, which is, you know, it just picks up on. Yeah, it picks up on electricity, and that could be picked up from something like an outlet in the wall or something like that. That's why you got to be careful as far as what you think might be there, because it could just very well be some electrical interference coming through the panel of the wall. But with a REM pod, it's a circle of lights, and you can kind of like set that on a table. And it's almost, if anything breaks that plane of the lights, it'll set it off. Like you said, so that's a little bit different to where it can just be sitting there not going off, and then all of a sudden it goes off, which means something's in that area that wasn't there a few minutes earlier.
I also use a static dome. It's from Vortex Ghost Gear. It's kind of a little bit cheaper than a REM pod, and it does natural EMF, so you can hold your phone over top of it. Now, if you hold your phone next to a REM pod, it's going to set it off. But next to the Vortex static dome, what it does, just like a REM pod, you know, it's got directional, it's got six different lights. So something walks all the way around it, it lights all those lights off. And I really like that. Trying to explain it to somebody that's new at it would, you know, he's a
right. But I'm sure there's plenty of YouTube videos people can look up these things and see exactly what it is after they listen to this. So yeah, what is your hopes for Haunted Kentucky? What are you looking to do with it?
You know, when I started, I didn't know that my group on Facebook would grow as much as it would, and I didn't think I'd have that many people. But what I would like to do in the future, starting now for next year, I want to do a lot more events, get our name out there, and do a lot more locations. Maybe expand, get a couple more group members, and just to, you know, locations in Kentucky to start with, obviously. But if somebody says something's really haunted, it doesn't matter. You know, I've helped people at private residences as well. So, you know, I want to go out there, look at stuff, and hopefully can disprove locations or, you know, give evidence that it's actually haunted as well.
What is your approach when you go out and you paranormal investigate? I've seen several different styles. Obviously, you've got the Zach Baggins intimidate and hoop and holler and try to piss off the spirit style. And then you've got other people that are just really laid back, super respectful, like an Amy Bruni or Adam Berry, Grant Wilson. How would you consider your style?
I would say I'm more old school. I try to use less equipment as possible. I try not to provoke anything. And it's funny you said that, because a lot of places I go to, they'll tell you when you first sign your waivers, you pay your money, don't provoke the spirit. That's, you know, a lot of locations tell you that, don't provoke it. I'm like, why are they telling us? They want us to provoke it to see what we get. You know, it's kind of a two-sided thing. I think I do better with less equipment, like walking in, explaining to them where I'm at, and using like an EMF reader and just basic equipment. And the less people you have, I think you get the better results.
What about as far as dowsing rods? Are you big into that? Is that something you use at all?
I've used them. I don't own a pair. Kelsey Brown, he actually was with me for a while. He has his own group now called Unearthing Paranormal. I used a pair of dowsing rods down in London. Now, the first time I used it was kind of weird because I was standing there and it was cold. I had a pair of gloves on. I didn't know what to do. So I'm like, is there any spirits with us? And I'm like sitting there freaked out, freezing to death. I'm like, is anything going to happen? And like less than 30 seconds later, they crossed. And if you don't know about dowsing rods, a yes, it'll cross. A no, it'll go out. So I was like, well, you know, we've got our answer. That's enough for today. And it was cold at the time. So
guarantee. We talked about a little bit about Somerset earlier. Mm-hmm. And Somerset just seems to be a place that has it all paranormal wise. And of course, if you watched Hellier, you know, they were there. They went to the International Paranormal Museum. I might have got the name wrong on that, but that's pretty close. That's in Somerset. But they talked about the amount of quartz, I think that's crystal down there. So, yeah. So tell me a little bit. You live in the area, or not live in the area, but I mean, you're in Somerset a lot. Tell me a little bit about what makes Somerset so special when it comes to the paranormal.
Well, you know, Pulaski County was a lot bigger. Now it's not as big as it used to be. But there's a lot of things in Pulaski County. Now they've had, they got a place called the Haunted Cave. It's, you know, supposed to be really haunted. Now going back to the quartz crystal, if you look, the fault lines and all that stuff connected, I think it's the 36th parallel. I'm not getting that right. I think it's one of the parallel lines that runs through Somerset. And they say it's one or two things. Either there's a lot of quartz crystal underneath Pulaski County that causes people to either think there's something paranormal or it causes them to go crazy. Now, if I'm referencing Hellier, they done a little research telling people that actually went to the mental wards. A lot of people was from Pulaski County and other places in Kentucky that actually has a lot of quartz underneath their soil. They've got a lot of locations that a lot of people don't really know about, but there's a cemetery in Somerset. I don't know if it was that something happened back in the early 1900s that killed a lot of children, maybe something in the water. I don't know what it was, but it did. There's like I've not been to the cemetery yet, but it's like they was born and died like the same day. And it's like every you know, gravestone there. There's supposed to be, I'm using my supposed to be fingers, so I don't know, cult activity, you know, in Somerset. There was a house on social media, I think it was on Facebook, maybe a year ago, 6 months, I'm not sure the right time frame. They put on top of it, save us, the cops are in on it, everybody's in on it. You know, there's a cult activity here. Not even 24 hours, they posted that on social media, they come and tore down. So if you get into all the cult stuff, which I like to research that and find out about a place, but a sheriff was killed, I think it's been over 10 years ago in Pulaski County, and all that was, you know, he was trying to mad at the other guy running for sheriff. That's happened down there at right before you get to Short Creek, which in Pulaski County, it's weird because it has the shortest creek and the longest creek. And I guess, I don't know if it's Kentucky or United States, I'm not sure which one, but Buck Creek is the longest creek which is 99 miles or 98 miles. Anything over that, it's a river. And mm-hmm. then Short Creek is the shortest creek. And literally, if you've not been there, you pull up on it, it's two cave openings on each side. And there's a little, you know, thing. That's a cool spot to go check out. Other than the International Paranormal Museum, there's a lot of other things to actually go do there. And, you know, that place right there by itself, it's three rooms of packed full of awesome stuff. There's stuff from all over the United States, especially the world. Stories there is kind of cool.
Yeah, the museum's really cool. And Kyle, who runs the museum, he was in Hellier as well. He did an interview with Greg on there, and he was very hesitant to talk about the cult activity, which is, you know, obviously if you see somebody from the area that's hesitant to talk about somebody, that means there's probably something going on.
Right. That's what I was thinking as well, but I've been doing it for the past year. I've been on all the little roads they've mentioned, you know, in the series. And it's strange, I'll bring this up real fast. If you look at it, they mentioned a road. There's supposed to be a house there, and there's a shaft that goes down in to the secret place. If you go on that road, and I'll have to look it up on my phone, I made a video about it on YouTube, and it says actual Hellier locations. Well, it's weird because normally out in the middle of nowhere, you know, it says, I got pictures of it and everything. It says, don't do certain things here. It's under video surveillance. Okay. Why would you have a sign on the side of an old place that says video surveillance in the middle of nowhere? You know what I mean?
Right.
So Hell Branch Road, I'm pretty sure that's it. They mentioned it in Hellier. It's Hell Branch Road in Somerset. I've been out there multiple times, and it's strange. First time I've ever went out there, Randy was with me. He's not with me tonight. And there was two black SUVs. Like, as soon as you pull in, they was like blocking the road. I'm like, all right. So my GPS is wrong. I'm turning around. I'm leaving. We came back again. And if you go all the way around it, it leads you to a old chapel. It's called Bradley's Chapel. And it's kind of neat. That road in general is strange. There's a couple houses on that road, but I've never actually found this place that they're mentioning in the series. But I don't understand why you would have surveillance on a road in the middle of nowhere. That's just like any side road in Kentucky would have a sign that says don't litter, obviously, but why are you videotaping it? You know what I mean?
Right. And like I said, that's the thing. If you haven't seen Hellier, there's Hellier 1 and Hellier 2, you need to check it out because it really digs deep into some different subjects. They go all the way back to the Hopkinsville goblins and the cave system. The longest cave system in the world is here in Kentucky. And it looks into a lot of, theories that maybe there's some cave people and aliens, and it's got a lot of good people on there from John E. L. Tenney, which I accidentally, actually love that guy. He's just like fantastic. He's like one of my idols in this business. And it's just, you know, Greg and Dana Newkirk do a fantastic job. Of course, Tyler and Connor do a fantastic job in it. And it's just an awesome show, and it's worth seeing. And they've won every damn award you can think of when it comes to those things. So, it's really cool to find out. I was fascinated the first time I started watching it. So you've kind of taken it upon yourself to just go to all these different locations that they listed in the documentaries, right?
Mm-hmm. I went down to Pikeville. I think a couple months ago, me and Randy went down there. We got a hotel room and stayed the night. We got up the next morning and we went to Hellier, Kentucky, and tried to go to the little gas station that actually filmed in the show, and it was closed. Mm-hmm. It's closed now, but we went to another gas station. I kind of asked questions. I didn't really barge in on them, you know, but I kind of told them what I'd done, and I kind of told them I was traveling and trying to find out, you know, what's going on around here. You know, is it really spooky? Is it really haunted? And I ended up giving one of the ladies a t-shirt. Her son really likes haunted stuff, so I gave him a t-shirt. But, you know, Hellier, Kentucky, if you go down there, it's not far from Ashland, or not Ashland, Pikeville, sorry. Not very far from there, but it's not really a big place. Like, you could throw a rock and you could land on the other side. it's a very weird, it's like a, I don't know if any, everybody's, you know, normal, you know, in Kentucky's like back roads, stuff like that. It's kind of strange place. It's neat though.
And I hate to keep harping back because it's not either one of our projects, but on Hillier, the reason that the documentary got its name is Greg Newkirk got an email from somebody that basically said that he'd seen these little creatures basically coming out of the cave, and he'd sent multiple emails, but he was from Hillier, Kentucky. And that's pretty much all that he knew, because the guy was pretty much using a pseudonym. So he wasn't his real name. And Greg decided to start checking it out. And that's kind of where all of it came from. But that came from Hillier, Kentucky. And then that led, just opened up a big can of worms, that a rabbit hole, I guess, that Greg started going down and started researching a little more. But that all came from Hillier, Kentucky, which is how the show got its name. So, well, enough about Hillier, Kentucky. How can we find out about Haunted Kentucky? Where can these people go if they want to find out a little more about you, Johan, and what you guys are trying to do?
Our group on Facebook is Haunted Kentucky.
Simple enough.
Yeah. I'm also on TikTok at Real Haunted Kentucky. I started TikTok about 3 months ago, and it's grown more than my YouTube. We're on YouTube at Haunted Kentucky. Twitter is Haunted Kentucky, and Instagram is Real Haunted Kentucky. I try to keep everything the same, but other people already have the name, so I had to put something different in there. I don't know if anybody has started TikTok yet that's doing paranormal, but I do highly recommend it, because my TikTok has grown in 3 months faster than what I've been doing on a year on YouTube, so I recommend that.
So if somebody went to your TikTok, or if they went to your YouTube, what kind of stuff would they see?
My YouTube has got our longer videos. Like, normally I try not to do an hour, maybe 30 minutes, but some of our stuff is longer. And you'll find all of our locations I've been in the past year on my YouTube. TikTok is all of our shorter stuff. You know, I take stuff from stuff I've been featured on Chills. I don't know if anybody's ever watched Chills on YouTube. I done one of my featured stuff on there on our TikTok, and it took off pretty well. I usually use TikTok to create shorter videos and to go live to let people watch us wherever we're at. And I usually go live on Facebook as well. But I'm trying to build up. I'm trying to bring my YouTube up to where it should be, which is kind of strange, because people will like, I guess their attention spans is kind of, you know, like they like shorter stuff, which I understand that. I got like 667 subscribers on YouTube, and I think I got like almost 1,500 followers on TikTok. So that's a little bit of a difference. But our group on Facebook has got about 2,300 people. So everybody don't play, you know, they don't follow the rules. So I still let them in.
Johan, I appreciate you coming on, brother. It's been fun.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. So everybody go subscribe, or I guess ask to join the group on Facebook, Haunted Kentucky. They have some fun stuff on there. And what is it to get on TikTok? Is it Real Haunted Kentucky?
It's at Real Haunted Kentucky. Yeah.
So go do that and subscribe on YouTube, and you'll have a blast. They got a lot of fun stuff on there. So he said he's going to take us to that haunted Cynthiana Opera House that we keep saying we're going to go to.
We definitely need to go there. And thank you for offering to take us. We've heard so much about it, and we still haven't got there yet. So
eventually.
Oh, we'll get there.
All right, Tracy, that wraps up this week. Once again, thanks to all of you guys for everything you do for us. Everything is just overwhelming sometimes, and you guys make it easier.
Yeah, you guys are awesome, and we always can depend on you. You know, we can say it 1,000 times. We are so blessed to have you guys in our lives, and, you know, you truly, truly are a blessing. So thank you for all your donations, and we can't wait to go get the rest of it and get it down there to those folks.
Yep, and if we fill the car up, then we'll just drop it off, and we'll go shopping somewhere close and buy more.
That sounds good to me, honey.
All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
I love you guys. Y'all have a blessed week.